Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Options Discovery. Today, I'm going to be sitting down with Doug Ashburn, who is currently the executive editor at Botanica Money. Doug, can you give us a little bit of an overview of your background and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. I spent about 24 years or so as a market maker and options, primarily options on foreign exchange at the CME. And I moved into the financial media world about 12 years ago, working actually, my first job as a media person was at John Lothian and Company. So I was there for about 5.5 years. And since then, I moved into the more the market education element. So teaching people, no matter where they are in their financial journey, how to trade, how to invest, how to manage their money, budgeting, savings, all touch points that you have with money. And that's what we're doing at Botanica Money. We launched that site last September, and we're continuing to add content every day, every week, just helping people with all elements of their financial journey.
And how would you say your background in the derivatives industry, especially since you, I think you were in it for a good 2 decades, how would you say that came into play with your work at Botanica?
Well, it really helped shape my view in terms of giving me empathy for the end user, the people who use it, because I've been at all those elements. And also it was through that point where I really felt like I had to make that transition from the old world to the new world. And I thought I could really kind of channel all of that, both the quantitative and the qualitative, into these lessons to help the next generation or anyone who, especially those who are new to trading.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that great introduction. Now we're going to pivot our conversation a little bit to more of the options related content, specifically the collar strategy. And one thing I'd like to mention is that I know you actually recently published an article about the collar strategy. So that's something our viewers can go look at online and just get some more information, just because that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. So my first question is, can you tell me a little bit more about what the collar strategy actually is and what has been your initial experience with it and how did you use it in your trading?
Sure. So, well, first of all, when talking about options, it's easy to break things down into why you would be using options in your investments. So, you know, one way is to use it to speculate on direction, you know, buying calls or puts. And then another way is to, instead of speculating on a direction in a capital efficient way, is to use it to enhance or protect a position you may already have. So let's take a stock, for example. Two of the most basic things you can do if you own a stock or any, you know, any asset is to target income from it, which is via the covered call. Which is selling an upside call strike against your stock position. And if the stock rallies up to a certain point, you can use that as kind of an exit strategy, an exit point, or if it doesn't quite get there, then you collect the premium. So it's thought of as an income generation / exit point targeting strategy. Another big basic strategy that you do to, if you have a stock, is the buying a put option, the protection for underneath. So that's buying a put option at a strike below where you're trading. And that way, if the stock were to go into free fall, then you have essentially an exit point there. So now you put those two things together and you have a collar. And the idea of the collar is that you can take the income that you would generate from the premium collected when you sell the call option to offset or at least defray the cost of the put protection. So, but then that, like everything with options, everything has trade-offs. So the trade-off in that is that you are capping your upside potential, meaning if you go all the way, if you go up through the short call strike, of course, then you're done. Basically, your stock will get called away or else you have to buy it back or whatever. But the point of the collar is to give yourself protection, but not have to pay the premium up front.
Okay. So what was your, I guess, initial experience when you first started using the collar strategy?
Well, as a market maker, I was more the person who was offering bid ask to people who were interested in any number of strategies. So it was really only when I moved to the other side of the table and became an educator that I learned how a retail person would think about employing these strategies. And that's when I was able to start using it from that side of the table. And really the first lesson that I learned is a reminder in the difference in implied volatility above and below the market. As people who've traded for a while know that the stock market tends to take the stairs up and the elevator down, and the panic tends to be more to the downside. And for that reason, the implied volatility and thus the premium of downside options is generally higher than upside. So when they say you can use the sale of the call option to offset the cost of the put option, it's rarely an equal thing. You're going to, if you say a stock that's trading at $100 a share, and you want to say, okay, well, I'll sell the 105 calls and buy the 95 puts, you're going to get less from the sale of that 105 call than it's going to cost you to buy the 95 put. So then you have that choice to make. You say, okay, well, do I still pay away a little bit of a net premium? Let's say if I were able to sell the call for $1.50, let's say, and you might have to pay $2 for the put, you just say, okay, well, my net cost is 50 cents for the collar. Or you say, instead, I will do something that is buy a put that is 5% out of the money, but sell a call that's only 4% out of the money, because that'll have a little bit higher premium. So then you can say, okay, now I can find a call option that I can get $2 in premium for against that put that I have to pay $2 for. So, but then what that means is your upside potential is capped at a lower rate than what your downside protection is. So that's the trade-off you have to make when you're looking at a collar. It's never going to be fully apples and apples.
Yeah, thank you for that example. It kind of puts things in perspective. My next question kind of relates to it, but what kind of trader adopts a collar? Are they more bullish or are they more bearish on the market? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
It's generally, it is bearish to neutral, and meaning if you're super bullish, you wouldn't want to do anything where you would cap your upside protection, or maybe you would, but it'd be further out. But if you're super bearish, like let's say you think that there's an earnings report coming out or some pending news or something, and you're worried, like this stock maybe has risen a lot, it might be ready for a sharp pullback, but I'm not ready to give up on it long term. You might say, okay, so I'm kind of neutral to the upside, but I'm nervous about that tail risk to the downside. That's when you would want to put on a collar. So if you were just nervous about the downside, but you said, I still think it has a lot of upside potential, you might just say, you know what, it's worth a few bucks for me to just buy the put right now and not sell a call against it. But if you said, the sentiment is a little bit to the bearish side, you might consider the collar.
Okay. So yeah, it's more of a bearish strategy, you would say.
Yeah.
So I know you spent a good 2 decades in the derivatives industry. How would you say the public's use of the collar strategy evolved over time? Or would you say it's largely stayed the same in the way that it's been used?
My perception is that it has stayed relatively the same. And there are times when it comes and goes. Like right now, over the last few weeks, we've been in a pretty extended bull market. And I think that people might be a little bit skittish about that. We saw, I don't know if you were following the markets a couple years ago when the meme stocks took off, and there was some, tentativeness, if you will, of selling calls, because if it wound up being one of those that got caught in that whole thing, then, it could really move a lot in a hurry and nothing to stand in its way. So when the market tends to get overloaded one way or the other, you might see a little bit of people changing their strategies. But by and large, the people who understand collars and it works for them, they will continue to do it. But in terms of a premium neutral strategy, I think people generally will do something like a collar or anything that requires a use of a protective put only when they really feel nervous about the downside. But yet you'll see people who are covered call sellers or buy right participants, as they call them, that are pretty steady. They feel like they find their groove, and people who do it for a long time have found a way to, you know, crank out decent money on it.
Yeah. So pulling from your training experience, and I think you touched upon this a little bit earlier, but can you explain to our viewers what signs a trader should look for in the underlying security when they're considering maybe adopting a collar?
Well, really, I guess it speaks to the flexibility of options. You can really tailor a strategy to whatever your view is. So the main thing is to, before you put on any options trade, is to do your homework and really think about what your objectives are and what your risk tolerance would be. And then, you know, you would put it around that. And that's really the first and only lesson that you would give to anyone who's considering this is, enter into every trade with your exit strategy in mind. And if that is that, hey, I have a profit potential and I have an amount of heat that I'm willing to take on this position, then put your strikes in accordingly. Or if you are more comfortable with, instead of using options to do this, you could use just watching charts and put in like a stop loss order on the downside or profit targets on the upside. If you're comfortable trading options, it's a nice way to let the premium and strikes help you with those decisions. But it's really just a matter of understanding what the math is on all of these things before you jump in.
So instead of selling an upside call against a position and at the same time buying a downside put, why wouldn't an investor sell an in-the-money call?
The trick of the selling an in-the-money call is you have to make sure that you are ready to go at expiration, right? You have to make sure that you have your decision tree in mind. So yes, you are technically taking in some premium over and above the intrinsic value of the option when you sell that call, but there are other dangers as well, especially if you might get exercised before expiration. Sometimes, you know, that's a danger, and then you wind up getting your stock called away when you didn't want to. But yeah, if you're just looking at wanting to take in premium, not have to pay away premium, but you want to be stopped out at a certain level, some traders do like that. I haven't personally. I just think it's, I've never cared for selling in the money options just because of the early exercise risk for the American style options. And just because it seems to me to require an extra layer of monitoring. But again, it speaks to the flexibility of options. There's more than one way, more than one strategy to achieve your objectives. And that's certainly a valid one in and of itself.
Well, thank you for that explanation. So my next question relates to a specific kind of collar strategy called the staggered collar. In this strategy, a trader buys a longer dated put and sells shorter dated calls against it. Can you tell me a little bit more about this strategy and what the idea behind it is?
So the idea behind a staggered strategy would be to have that downside put protection in place, and then you can be a little bit more targeted in taking in that income from the call sales. So you would sell a shorter dated call, and it would have, as you know, the closer you get to expiration, the faster your rate of decay. So the bigger the theta number. So you can take that in. Now, if you were comparing it apples and apples, you're going to have to pay a lot more for that put than you're getting on that call sale. But then when that call expires or when it gets near expiration, you can actually, if we're still out of the money, then you can buy in your short and sell one of the next expiration date or a later expiration date. And depending on where the underlying has moved up or down, you can change which strike you have too. So you can always be a little bit more methodical about where you put in your next call trade. And if you do it right, you can, in the time that that put has been on your books, you can take in more premium in total from the multiple, however many weeks out you were, however much time out, sales of that call option. So that's a strategy that some prefer. It's a bit more hands-on than the than a straight-up caller that's all on the same expiration date. So it requires a lot more trading. It requires a lot more monitoring. You have to think about strikes. You'll have to roll from your short strike into the next one, which also, we haven't talked about this yet, which also means you're going to have higher transaction costs. And, you know, it's easy to kind of assume those away because, you know, for a lot of things, they're commission free these days, but there's still costs even when it's commission free. Your costs are not just that there are exchange fees that go along with it, another little transaction cost that your broker is going to have, but also every time you buy and sell, you're actually crossing the bid ask, which means there's a small mathematical theoretical edge that you're giving to the market maker on the other side of the trade. And that's another thing you were asking earlier about, you know, my days as a market maker. And that's really mine, is that because I know that the part of the transaction costs are crossing the bid ask, because that was what kept me in business for many years. I try to limit where I can the number of times I have to, as a retail trader, cross that bid ask. So that's just something you have to keep in mind. But if you're good and you're diligent, you pay attention, and you have your right points and you have your right strategies, people who do a staggered strategy say they come out ahead week after week.
So for this strategy, you would say the main risks, or I guess downsides to it, are just like having to manage it quite more often, and then also just the transaction costs?
Transaction costs, monitoring more often, and you have to really be intuitive about how you play it, because depending on, you know, where the underlying has moved in that time period, you have to think about what's your next play. And if you start getting close to your downside strike, at what point do you say, okay, this has served its purpose, I need to get out of the collar entirely, or maybe even roll that put option into something that's deferred also. So it winds up being part of a longer term strategy. And as far as what works better, it really is, it's really what's more comfortable for you, what you get the hang of, what you, you know, and all traders have all sorts of different decision trees, decision algorithms, as far as when they get in and out.
So it's kind of for more maybe an experienced trader, or someone who has just that experience with trading and using collars and stuff.
Yeah, and know what has worked historically for them, and know what their touch points, their pain points are, because that's another thing that is not the same for all people. I mean, my objectives and risk tolerance are not the same as yours, nor any of them.
All right, thank you for that explanation about the staggered collar. My next question is a little bit more situational. In some cases, it's previous to the earlier questions, but let's suppose that a trader's forecast changes from their original forecast when they adopted the collar. And I don't think that's a very rare occurrence. I think that happens quite often sometimes. So how could a trader manage their collar to better fit a new forecast?
Well, that's the first rule of trading is, whenever a trade or position is no longer serving your objectives or risk tolerance, it's time to move on. So for me, I've been more likely, my default position has been to just liquidate all of the entire package and say, okay, now let's think about what would best serve my objectives from here on out. Not everyone does that. Some people will say, actually, it's cheaper, easier, and better, and will fit my objectives if I were to put a Band-Aid on, whether that's rolling the strikes, rolling the expiration dates, or doing as I say, which is just, you know, getting out of the entire thing. So it's really a personal thing. The main thing is to know when you get into anything, if every situation that you can think of happening, think of the entire decision tree, all of the things that could possibly happen with this package, the collar and the underlying. And in any of these scenarios, what would you do? And be ready to jump if any of those things happen. So It's really, you know, changing objectives, changing strategy, changing position.
So for your view of it, you would say that it's kind of more risky to sustain the collar. And then for some other people, they would say, like you said, just put on a Band-Aid and just keep going with it.
Well, some people, yeah, it really, again, goes back to what your objectives are. If you say, okay, well, we moved right up to my short strike within a few days of putting this thing on. That wasn't supposed to happen. What do I do? Now, the premium that I've sold is now, I've got a theoretical loss on this. I've got a loss on the put that I bought. It's lower in value, but I've been profiting on the stock. You have to look at it and say, okay, well, am I up or am I down? Should I roll all of these strikes, or should I say, you know what, we're up here, let's just see what happens. You can sit and watch it for a while, but then if the stock keeps going, now you say, okay, well, now we're through my strike. Do I want my stock to be called away, or do I want to liquidate and move on, or do I want to hold it a little bit further? And so it's really all of those things. You have to say, well, how much heat can I take? How disappointed will I be if I put this thing on and the stock that I've owned is now no longer mine? Will I be disappointed? You know, if so, then it might be the case that you blast out of the whole thing and say, okay, well, maybe the collar strategy isn't right for me and in this particular stock. So
yeah, that's definitely giving me a bit of perspective on that whole thing. So I've gotten through most of the options related questions specifically towards the collar strategy. Now we're going to wrap up the conversation. I have a few final conclusion questions. My first one being is, what are some of the most important lessons you've learned while working in the derivatives industry? And what's some advice you'd give to someone looking to get started?
Well, the first thing is doing your homework. And it's never been a better time really to do that, because if you get in with your broker, is probably going to have a top-notch simulator program that allows you to play around with things. There's worlds of data at your fingertips, and a lot of them, if you learn how to use their back testing tools, you can think about, like, well, if this would have happened, if I had had something on during this occurrence, what would have happened? Then you say, okay, now I see how the price has actually moved. I can use that and move it forward. So in that regard, it's the easiest time. That being said, it's also, there have been layers upon layers of complexity added to our markets over the years in terms of the market structure and the flow of information. Information is everywhere, but trying to figure out the truth behind that information has gotten harder and harder. And this is where I bring it back home to my colleagues at Britannica Money. What we are trying to do is say, well, we're part of Encyclopedia Britannica, a company that your great-great-grandfathers knew and your grandkids know, and everyone respects that we are a source of truth. And so if we can bring this same history of commitment to vetted truth to your financial journey, that people can have that same level of comfort with this financial knowledge. So that's really the answer is doing your homework, but making sure that you are using information that's out there, not disinformation or misinformation.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what Options Discovery is trying to do, is just spread more information about options, I guess, to the broader public or to people who aren't as experienced. Just like me, I'm not like a super experienced options trader. I'm just learning every day.
Not yet.
Maybe in 20 years, I'll be there.
Do you have a brokerage platform that you're using?
Not yet. I'm still kind of exploring that. It's something that I'm definitely going to work on. But yeah, I'll reach out to you and get some more advice about that.
Yeah, for sure.
And so my next question is that, I'm sure you know, every week we have a new topic that we cover on Options Discovery. Do you have any recommendations of possible topics we could cover in the future?
Yeah, I do, actually. Can I shoot you some ideas? I like the ideas of just understanding all of the the option risks, what we call the Greeks, you know, so making sure you understand how they work. Because, you know, I showed you these graphics, you know, what the diagram of a covered call and a protective put and putting them together and having a collar. But if you look at those, you'll know that those are the payouts at expiration. So that's, you know, you're capped line here and there, but 90 something percent of options are not carried through to expiration. They're actually liquidated ahead of time. So what that means in your monitoring things ahead of time, how do things look from the time you put on a trade to when you take that trade off? And so you want to understand conceptually by looking at the expiration payout graphs, but really you need to understand how options really move in the real world before you can really feel like, okay, I'm doing this right. You know, an example is you say, okay, well, I bought a call option and 3 days later, the stock rose a dollar and I look and I'm down 20 cents. Why did that happen? Like, well, you know, what happened to implied volatility? So look at your Vega. What happened to 3 days of decay or theta? And then you can look at those things together and you realize that like, okay, it's not a one-to-one thing, you know, understanding how delta moves, which is another metric called gamma, and understanding how all those things work together to influence the price of an option in between when you buy or sell it and when you liquidate that position. So I would recommend doing maybe even entire episodes on each of those Greek risks and then something that says, okay, now put them all together and talk about the interplay. Mm-hmm. I would also recommend doing another one on, doing one on vertical spreads because, a lot of your brokers will not allow you to sell so-called naked options, which is something that doesn't have a position around it, unless you're in a margin, unless you're in a an approved account that has enough margin money in it. So, and some just flat out won't let you do it at all. So, but if you want to do something that allows you to take in premium, you can do it via a vertical because then it caps your risk. So then your risk is defined from the outset. So.
Thank you for the recommendations. I'm definitely going to look into those because I think after this episode, I'll be working on a few others. So I think I have one final question. It's not super related to options. It's actually more related to your work with John Lothian News. Can you tell our viewers about a favorite project you worked on at John Lothian News?
Well, when I started, it was right in the early days of the financial regulatory overhaul called the Dodd-Frank Act in the U.S. And there was others in Europe and across the world and trying to figure out what was happening and how it was going to happen. How was it all going to unfold? So we had started an adjunct to Markets Wiki all about financial regulation called Markets Reform Wiki. From what I understand, when I left, it was right around the time when they were kind of wrapping up that first wave. It wasn't getting as much eyeballs. They weren't doing as much. So I don't think they're actively editing the site. But it was, for its time and place, it was kind of a nice little right place, right time niche because it was hard to make head or tails of it. There was, John used to like to tell this story that when you looked at who was actually using that site, in the top five users oftentimes was, and I don't want to out any of our regulators, but it was one of our regulators who was coming to our site regularly to see how we were organizing it because apparently we were doing a better job organizing their content than they were themselves. So John loved to tell that story. Mm-hmm. But it allowed us then to actually talk to a lot of the people who were the policymakers, the commissioners of CFTC and SEC and so it really helped, bring attention to this thing as it was unfolding. So that was probably the most impactful thing that I worked on from an editorial standpoint.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. I'll have to bring it up to John next time I talk to him. So that's all I have for today. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experiences and knowledge about options. I know I learned a lot, and I'm sure our viewers will too. And with that being said, I'll see you guys in the next episode.
If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.